Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Can you believe it's Sunday already? And this is One Nation. You're going to love the show tonight. Michael Rubin is queued up to put in perspective what's going on in the Middle East. Are we back to war in Iran, or is the ceasefire going to hold? We'll discuss it. Brian Hollihan's going to be here, and Lydia Moynihan on the next step for the next generation, and Stephen Miller, where we go from here on immigration enforcement. Man, he's going to break some news tonight. But first, we begin with the war in Iran. After 21 hours of indirect talks with that country, for the first time in decades, the results? No deal.
We've had a number of substantive discussions with the Iranians. That's the good news. The bad news is that we have not reached an agreement. And I think that's bad news for Iran much more than it's bad news for the United States of America.
But first, Trump was not just waiting for the talks to conclude. He sent ships to open up the Strait of Hormuz and find mines Iran planted but can't quite remember where they put them. Then, in a masterful check on Iran's extortion plot to control the Strait, Trump flipped the script and put in place a complete blockade. Writing this on Truth Social this morning, effective immediately, the U.S. Navy will begin the process of blockading any and all ships trying to enter and leave the Strait of Hormuz. Additionally, we are fully locked and loaded, and our military will finish up the little that is left of Iran. So, what will this do?
It's an economic squeeze. So if you think of this on a scale that runs from doing nothing, walking away from the table, ceasing hostilities, that runs to destroying the civilization of Iran, an economic blockade like this is right in the middle. It puts economic pressure on Tehran without destroying the oil facilities, which you'd want to preserve into the future. So big, complicated undertaking, hardly a trivial move on the chessboard we've been watching.
It's a big one. No one is allowed into the Strait unless everyone is allowed into the Strait. The theory, the economic pressure will force Iran to give in, and the world pressure will demand they give in. Clearly, the president's ready to go back to the fight if Iran takes action. That's military action, essentially finding ending the ceasefire if they hit us at all. This will be the most consequential week to date in this conflict, as talks are on pause, as is the fighting for now as well. What I found astounding, though, is the number of failed Obama and Biden officials who allowed this terror regime to prosper and enrich uranium, who are now trying to rewrite history in the hope that we would forget how we got to this point of confrontation. Case in point, failed Secretary of State Antony Blinken today. In the case of enrichment, even now, he still thinks Iran can be trusted.
My understanding is at various points over the last year and a half, in the discussions that the administration was having with the Iranians put something like that forward. It's not clear whether the folks we had at the table fully grasped what they were getting from the Iranians. We never conceded their right to enrich. But as a practical matter, under the JCPOA, we moved out 97% of their highly enriched uranium, but they retained some capacity at a very low level.
The problem was they retained the capacity for enrichment. What does he still not get? Now they have enough for 11 bombs. Does he understand that? As for the JCPOA, it was a terrible deal. And even your own party leadership knew it. The year was 2015. The name? Chuck Schumer.
Under this agreement, Iran would receive at least $50 billion in the future. and would undoubtedly use some of that money to create even more trouble in the Middle East and perhaps beyond. Current autocratic regime views this deal as a way to get relief from onerous sanctions while still retaining their designs on nuclear arms and regional hegemony. To me, the very real risk that Iran will not moderate and will instead use the agreement to pursue its nefarious goals is too great. Therefore, I will vote to disapprove the agreement.
Stop saying war of choice. Stop saying that Donald Trump is doing this and it was a bad move. When you met a series of bad moves and plans and programs and deals like that, let's be clear. You can be a critic of the Trump administration, even though most of the criticism reeks of pure politics. But you cannot change the pathway of failure that led us here. Joining me now, retired Vice Admiral Robert Horwood, former Deputy Commander of the U.S. CENTCOM, and Vice Admiral, also you spent the majority of your youth in Iran. First off, with this maritime blockade, the way we understand it, it starts at 10 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow. What's the real impact?
Economic warfare, as my shipmate Admiral Stavridis mentioned, but there's another dimension to it as well. It continues to illustrate how impotent the regime of Iran is. And let's not forget, everyone loses sight. I grew up in the Middle East, in Iran, where you went to Lebanon, you went to Syria. It was a wonderful region. The Islamic Revolution came to power and has decimated not only Iran, but Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and the whole region with this exporting the Islamic Revolution. And this nuclear capability is just another extension of that. So you have to salute the president and the vice president on this step today. Look, millions of people were concerned, not just Iranians, but regional players, that they would make some sort of deal, that we would give in to the Iranians. But we made it very clear. Passage through the Straits of Hormuz and getting rid of your nuclear program is undisputable. You have to meet that. They did not. Okay, we're not going to play your game. We're not going to be strung on. It's over. We're cranking up the pressure. We're coming after you. And this is just the first step of that.
And Admiral, just some naval questions now. How would the blockade work? I understand that we don't have the right number of ships yet, but we will soon. And there's a sense that if we put our ships there, we don't have to have every mile accounted for. You stop one, you spook the herd, correct?
Well, yes, but we also have radar. We have ISRs. We can watch everything, and we'll see the ships that go through, in or out, and we can stop it. And not just blockade them. Now that you have the Mew, you have helicopter assets, you can board any and every ship you have. So, again, the blockade is just the first step of what may be a much more escalatory approach and strategy to increase pressure on the regime.
All right. Admiral, there's something else significant that happened. We sent a ship through. Go ahead. Finish up.
Well, I still can't emphasize enough how important this is inside Iran. The pressure on the regime from the people and how this signals to them how weak they are, how strong the U.S. And as the president has said, help is on the way and it's there now. So all these, at the end of the day, change the dynamics inside the country. And that's just as important as what's happening outside the country.
Admiral, I just also think it's encouraging, too, that we sent a ship through there to pick up any mines we saw, and we didn't see any. And these clowns dropped the mines, and they don't seem to know. Okay, they found two. They don't seem to know where they put them. So even the Iranians don't know exactly where they are. I understand we're using underwater drones to find the mines. Is that correct?
That's one tool we have in our count. And Brian, I'll tell you, I did the counter mine operations against Iraq in 2003 when we took Qusar and went up their waterways. It's tough to deploy mines. It's tough to account them. And if we eradicated all of them, some may be more rhetoric and inspiration than true capabilities. And ultimately, as you saw, we had two guided missile destroyers go through the straits already. That indicates free passage may be. So how much, and some of this is validating the real threat, although as opposed to the perception of the threat. How much did we eradicate? How much have we taken out of the Navy? How many can they really put into the waters and command and control of those?
And what I loved, Admiral, and I'll have to let you go here, I talk to you tomorrow on Fox and Friends, but I love the fact that while we're having these talks of 21 hours, they get word that we're sending ships through the strait. Because we're sending the message, yeah, we're in a ceasefire for now. But just so you know, we're ready to keep this going if need be. And they understand the damage that they received, even if the American press is ignoring it. Admiral, you're not. You're always on the money. Thanks so much. Meanwhile, now to this. There is no denying that blockading Iran's oil exports and imports could weaken the government, cut off the revenue, limit the fuel supplies they need for military operations. So, is the move the U.S. needs to do right now to shut down the Iranian regime once and for all? Is the blockade the move they need to have? Let's ask senior fellow Michael Rubin, who spent considerable time in post-revolution Iran. Michael, what will this move do to bring some type of favorable end to the Iran regime?
Brian, you're absolutely right that Donald Trump flipped the script on Iran. The only criticism I have of this move is it comes a month too late. The fact of the matter is Iran needs to both export oil, but a lot of people forget it needs to import gasoline. And if it can't do either, if our blockade is directed towards that, then the Iranians can't pay their Revolutionary Guard. They can't pay the Iraqi militias or Hezbollah. They come in to shoot crowds in the street. But at the same time, if they can't get gasoline, they can't run their military vehicles or their small boats. So this is a very, very smart move on Donald Trump's part.
Absolutely. A couple of things that I think is important is that almost no Democrat can remember the fact that we had a pathway to this confrontation, that appeasement and talks got us nowhere. I want you to hear from Tim Kaine today, the senator that should know better from Virginia. Watch.
I'm not sure what President Trump's red lines are because they seem to change all the time. Iran entered into an agreement with the United States and other nations, both allies of the U.S. and China and Russia, in 2016, reaffirming that they would never purchase, seek, or acquire a nuclear weapon. Donald Trump tore that up. He tore up the restrictions on uranium production. He tore up the restrictions on centrifuge production. He tore up the deal that allowed intrusive inspections in Iran.
So did Donald Trump tear up a good deal?
No, Donald Trump didn't tear up a good deal. Donald Trump tore up a horrendous deal. First of all, Tim Kaine is wrong. The 2015 agreement didn't absolve Iran of its responsibilities under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. That's why we're in this problem in the first place, because Iran was blatantly violating it. Number two, Iran would have been left with an industrial-scale centrifuge program with all the sanctions lifting basically around now. The third point that Tim Kaine gets wrong is that the 2015 deal was enshrined in UN Security Council Resolution 2231, so it remains the law for Iran, not for the United States. What Donald Trump did was perfectly legal. If Barack Obama and John Kerry had done this as a treaty, we'd be talking about a different story. But the fact of the matter is they did this as a signing ceremony, a legacy builder. They thought that they were building a shiny skyscraper. What they got was a termite-ridden shack.
Right. Michael, and the problem was it wasn't a treaty because he couldn't get the votes from a Democratic Senate and from Democratic leaders to pass it as a treaty. They knew it was a sucky deal. They knew it allowed him to enrich. They knew it was going to expire in 10 years, had him still funding all their proxies and having ballistic missiles, for some of which go, they could actually hit almost every European capital. So we'll see. I guess we'll see where it goes. Real quick, there's a threat now from Iran to block the Red Sea through the Houthis. Are you worried about that?
I am a little bit worried about that, but you know, the Houthis should be much more worried about that, because in Operation Rough Rider, March to May 2025, Donald Trump showed the Houthis just what they could do. You know, last August, I spent in Yemen with the Southern Resistance Forces. If we supported them more, I have every confidence that we could push the Houthis back away from the Red Sea.
Well, Michael Rubin, thanks so much. A lot of changing events, and I have a sense that ceasefire is not going to last, and we should not sweat it. Meanwhile, to a Fox News alert, Congressman Eric Swalwell ending his campaign for governor of California just days after he was accused by former staffers of sexual assault and misconduct, posting this on X. I'm suspending my campaign for governor. To my family, staff, friends, and supporters, I'm deeply sorry for mistakes and judgment I've made in my past. I will fight the serious false allegations that have been made, and that's my fight. It's not a campaign. Next, in this show, does new leadership at DHS mean a softer tone on immigration? The White House's own Stephen Miller will be joining us exclusively. Don't move. And also, be sure to catch me on my tour, streamed on Fox Nation, Reno, Nevada, May 30th, Pensacola, July 11th, Florida. And look at those dates up in the fall, including Westbury, New York, Clearwater, Florida, Jacksonville, as well as Chesterfield, Missouri. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. Thanks so much for watching. Much more of the show to go. Thanks for making One Nation part of your Sunday. Don't move.
The question is, are you comfortable with him taking over Homeland Security?
Well, since Kristi Noem was in that position before, the bar is so low that if this guy doesn't kill a dog, you know, we've already ahead of the game.
Yeah, I guess so. That's one way to put it. Buried below the Iran war headlines, the story that once dominated the news. Then there's been a massive change at the DHS, as referred to by the viewer show you don't watch. Kristi Noem has been moved out. Now it is Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen. He is now in. And despite the chaos in the Middle East, immigration reform is still at the top of the president's to-do list. A lot's been already accomplished. What is going to be accomplished now that Mullen is at the helm? Is it time for a so-called softer approach? President Trump mentioned that.
I learned that maybe we can use a little bit of a softer touch, but you still have to be tough. These are criminals. We're dealing with really hard criminals.
He's 100% right. Joining us right now, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy, Stephen Miller, quite aggressive with immigration. Stephen, is it great to see you? Is it going to be a softer approach under Secretary Mullen?
So what President Trump was referring to there was the need to be tactically smart, tactically effective, tactically efficient. In order for ICE officers to do their jobs, to perform their duties, and let's not forget that the Democrats in Congress are trying to and in the process of working to defund ICE and CBP. But in order for ICE to be most effective at its mission, you need to have good, sharp, smart, tactical planning to be able to make these arrests as effectively, quickly, seamlessly as possible. So I think what you're going to see under Secretary Mullen, who has become a close friend of mine, everybody in the administration has nothing but the highest respect, admiration, and esteem for him, is he's going to be sitting down with ICE, with the professionals at CBP, and developing a plan to carry out, as the president has promised, the largest mass deportation operation in history as seamlessly, professionally, effectively, quickly as it can possibly be done.
Right. So, and optics do matter, and we all know that as you tell the story. The $50 billion has been put aside to build a wall. I understand it hasn't been spent. What's it going to take to get that wall built?
So we got some very exciting news for you there, Brian. Right now, DHS is at 5 miles a week under President Trump's leadership on the border wall. We call it border wall phase two, since President Trump did 500 miles in term one. So Congress fully funded it in the first reconciliation bill. So that money is there. It's nice. Set aside. It's dedicated for the project. And I just learned today that CBP says they will soon be at the milestone of 1 mile per day in new border wall.
Nice.
And that includes, by the way, a water barrier. So on the Rio Grande, they are putting a water barrier in place. There's 5 miles so far, but it's going to stretch all the way across to stop water-based human smuggling.
So a couple of things, Stephen. Everyone said it's impossible to talk about immigration reform without sealing the border. Nobody I know, Democrat or Republican, who does not believe the border is sealed, leads some to say, like farmers and meat packers, what about some of the illegals here that are helping my company, which led Mike Lowell, a Republican in a battleground district, to roll out the Dignity Act. Here's a little of it.
It says if you've been here more than 5 years, so not the people that came under Joe Biden's disastrous administration, but the people who have been in this country more than 5 years, 10, 15, 20 years, whose children and grandchildren may in fact be American citizens, they would qualify if they have not committed a crime. They pay back taxes. They pay a fine. They have a job, and they do not collect government benefits. They would qualify for a legal status, not citizenship.
So a little about what he mentioned, but here's some of the facts with the Dignity Act. Where do you stand with it, Stephen?
Well, you know that this administration opposes amnesty. President Trump has always been clear in his opposition to amnesty. And I, of course, you know my own views. But I want to reframe this whole conversation, Brian, if I could, to something that President Trump has been very focused on for a long time. And that's about having the kind of immigration to this country that makes us stronger, not weaker. I think this conversation gets siloed too often when we have to look at the whole picture. You know, you saw the recent tragic case where an illegal alien from Haiti bludgeoned a woman to death in broad daylight with a hammer, smashing her skull in one hammer blow after another. That's what happens when you have open borders to this country from some of the most dangerous parts of the world. That's one person that Biden let in, the Democrats let in, to maim and murder our citizens, but there are thousands more. When you have open migration, as we've had, Brian, largely, it was very bad under Biden, but largely for 5 decades before President Trump, we had open migration from the most dangerous places of the world. How do your schools work? How do your hospitals work? How does your economy work? How do you have a society that can win all these great civilizational struggles against our adversaries around the world if you have to feed, house, clothe, educate, support, give affirmative action to millions and millions of people from failed states around the world? So President Trump has said, we want to have high-value migration into this country, not low-value migration. And we have to deal with the fact that we have millions of people here who are on welfare, who are not contributing,
right,
who commit a lot of crime, who consume a lot of public resources, and it's in the best interest of this country for those people to be humanely returned home. That's the big conversation.
Gotcha.
And so this old Washington conversation about amnesty is missing the whole point. The real conversation is, how do we have an immigration policy that makes America stronger and more unified,
right,
not weaker and more divided?
So let's move to fraud. You guys are all over this, and you're very aggressive on it. And when it was brought up in California, the AG came out and said, Trump is deranged. When we talked about fraud, he has no relationship with reality. He also said that you're politicizing an issue that doesn't exist. That same AG is finding hundreds of millions of dollars in fraud after you guys started unearthing it. Listen to this, Kat. Listen to this change of thought.
California DOJ has been going after healthcare fraud since 1979. For decades. Trump is late to the party.
Is he late to the party, Stephen Miller?
So, as President Trump has said, and this is completely true, but for fraud, we could balance the federal budget. In other words, if the only people who receive benefits were those who lawfully qualified, were actually eligible, and actually needed them, we would balance the federal budget. President Trump was relentlessly attacked by the corrupt government of California, by the corrupt government of Minnesota, by the corrupt Democrats in Washington for exposing the plague of fraud that is taking place in this country. Now you have a face-saving effort by the government of California to try to pretend that they care about this issue. Here's a fact for you, Brian. We have been trying for 15 months to get the roles of Medicaid recipients and food stamp recipients in California simply to scrub off the illegal aliens and non-citizens who are getting benefits. And for 15 months, we're in court over this. We're being sued by California over this. For 15 months, the governor and the corrupt leaders of that state have refused to provide the federal government that is paying these benefits with the names of the recipients so we can simply remove illegal aliens and non-citizens from the welfare rolls that American taxpayers are funding. Now, what you're going to see with President Trump's task force that he put Vice President Vance in charge of is increasing scope of raids, prosecutions, enforcement actions, and convictions. The month right now that we're in is going to be the beginning of this large ramp up. In the near weeks, you're going to see more and more enforcement, more and more results, and you're going to see more and more delivery of justice for the American people who've been robbed blind.
Yeah, and an AG trying to save his face and maybe his political career, hundreds of millions of dollars, it gets into the billions, and California possibly is the worst offender. Stephen Miller, thanks so much.
Great. California, billions and billions, Brian.
Absolutely.
Billions.
I know, you're all over it. That's where you grew up. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Stephen Miller. Always great to see you. Coming up straight ahead on this show, more countries are restricting social media for kids. But are young Americans already over the social media platforms? Are they pushing back on their own? A young panel, Brylan Hollihan, Lydia Moynihan, tell us about it. Don't move. You're watching One Nation. Glad you are.
I got a good intuition. I'ma make a bad decision. 'Cause me, my phone, and the neon.
Everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded.
A lot of people think Google's just a search box and Facebook's just a place to see what my friends are doing. What they don't realize is there's entire teams of engineers whose job is to use your psychology against you.
Yep. Remember when Social Dilemma came out a few years ago? At the time, it felt eye-opening. Now it feels prophetic. The film warned that tech companies were working behind the scenes to manipulate your mind, young mind, shaping kids and getting their profits somehow going into their coffers at their expense. It set off alarm bells for parents and hopefully with kids. Then government started to take notice. In fact, Greece, now the latest European nation, pushing major restrictions on social media use for an entire country for kids under 15. Australia did the same thing months ago. Perhaps more importantly, kids themselves are finally realizing what's happening. Even the New Yorker capturing the shift in opinions in a viral cartoon. Look at this. Young people realizing they're being manipulated, choosing to ditch their phones before government can force the issue. So is the next generation finally rebelling against the algorithm? Let's bring in New York Post columnist, deep thinker Lydia Moynihan, and Brylan Hollihan, the host of the Brylan Hollihan Show. Welcome to both of you. First off, to the cartoon, Lydia, do you get the sense the next generation's realizing what happened to the previous generation?
100%. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You look at the polling, 70% of Gen Z, at least, wishes that social media had never been invented. And I think people are seeing how it's impacting families and communities. And I think this legislation is so needed. We can also see how successful it's been in a country like Australia. You look at school scores are going up where it's been implemented. And the government in America, I feel like, is so overzealous about regulating everything. And yet they've been kind of shy about stepping in here. And so I'm hopeful that they get some sort of framework passed. Actually, at the Post, we've been reporting on over the last week, a new bill from Congressman Gottheimer that basically, as soon as a child gets a phone, hopefully they're not getting a phone at all, but if they do get a phone, the parent has to say, this child is only 14. They cannot sign up for Facebook. They can't sign up for Instagram, TikTok, and monitor it that way. And my hope is that as kids get off social media, maybe it'll influence the parents and others to take a step back as
Brown,
well.
Brown, what's your personal view? Because you lived this as an individual before you started getting active in politics. And the fact is that there is some pushback now because the court cases. Parents actually won a court case against these major social media companies.
Yeah, I'm not shocked at all, Brian. Honestly, I'm surprised it took this long. I mean, we've already regulated and banned, say, nicotine or alcohol because of how addictive they are. But we put a phone that is calculated to become addictive to your eyes and the hands of children the second they learn how to speak. And we're just told that that's normal. We're told that in society, that's what's expected. And honestly, that addictiveness is what's made our generation the way we are. Thankfully, we're waking up to that. We're realizing that.
You keep on building on this in a way, and that is podcasts. I mean, I know so many people come up to me and say things that I don't even understand where they got it from, that, you know, the president of France's wife is a man, or that we never landed on the moon. And then you listen to some of the most popular podcasts, which I like, and they don't pretend in many cases to be a source of news, but a lot of it, they're so popular they become just that. I'll give you an example. Joe Rogan talking about the, I guess, the genesis of our problems with Iran. Watch.
There was some file. I didn't read it, but a bunch of people sent it to me. I just went, oh, Jesus. It was from some Freedom of Information Act or some leak from the 1950s with the CIA. And they were trying to think of different ways to make people docile and stupid and unmotivated.
Yeah. And he went on to say that in the 50s, we overthrew a democratic government and put in Islamic extremists. And that he looked at Gemini in Lifetime, an hour and a half later, he said, well, that didn't happen. But for the people who listened in the beginning, right, it did happen, Lydia.
It's all about the severity of the accusation. Even if you roll it back months later, it kind of doesn't matter. It's interesting because I think this came from a good place. People were very disillusioned with mainstream media, saw the bias there. And then I think we kind of went out of the frying pan into the fire, where now a lot of people are getting their news exclusively from these podcast hosts who they would acknowledge themselves are more entertainers than actual reporters or professionals trying to seek and verify truth before they share it with their audience. And now we're seeing, obviously, it's great to ask questions, but sort of the uncertainty that people had about government during COVID, now we've seen that extend to questioning the moon landing and the Holocaust and embracing conspiracy theories wholeheartedly.
And you know, that Israel's behind all of our moves because someone said it on a podcast. Brylin, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's become really easy to blame an entire people in our entire country just because you're frustrated with one issue. My stance on that is really simple. If you're frustrated with the system, same, I am too, but you don't tear it down, you rebuild it. You can scream and rant into the oblivion all you want. It's going to do nothing unless you build something. A lot of this frustration started with people not trusting traditional media after COVID, and that's fair. But just because it's a 3-hour conversation doesn't mean it's more trustworthy than a 3-minute segment. I think we're trusting a lot of entertainers to be journalists. For example, Joe and Theo are nice guys. They're not journalists. Joe admitted for himself in the opening of that video that he looked at the cover of an article, but he didn't read a single piece of paper. He looked at something and then talked about it for 3 hours. Did he do his due diligence? Did he do his research? No. But so many young people have come up to me at a dining hall in the past week specifically quoting that exact clip and saying, oh my goodness, is America going insane, without even checking their research. A lot of people have to wake up and smell the roses that you can be a bold conservative without being a bitter one.
Right. It's a conversation. It's not the source of news. And I'm not to be critical of him at all. So lastly, we talk about this midterm election, Lydia. It looks like only 33% of young people under 34 are motivated to vote. In terms of the war itself, 33, I should say, in terms of the war itself with Iran, most aren't in support. Do you think the GOP is in trouble on both those areas if those numbers stay the same?
I think the GOP is absolutely in trouble, but I think Democrats are also in trouble. You look at the polling, it's not good for Republicans. But it's even worse in some ways for Democrats. And Gen Z in particular is sort of motivated by this concept of negative partisanship, right? The reason I think we saw Donald Trump win in such a sweeping victory is because people saw the insanity of the left. They saw what happens with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and an open border and woke policies. And so I think people have maybe forgotten that the last few months, but I think we're sort of seeing a resurfacing of the left's insanity. You look at Gavin Newsom's wife talking about giving her boys dolls. You're talking about what Mamdani is doing here. And so I think as people see the crazy policies that the Democrats are promoting, right, I think that's going to push them more into Republicans' arms.
Brian, do you feel the same way or differently?
Yeah, Brian, I was a first-time voter in 2024, and the exact same reasons why Republicans overwhelmingly won over so many young voters is for the same truth today. I mean, for decades, the Democrats have dangled free things and emotions in front of our generation's face. They've given us empty promise after empty promises. They've looked at us and told us to sit down, shut up, wait our turn, and live with our masculinity toxic. They compared us to Hitler Jr. All of that is still true, but my caution is exactly what Lydia said. Republicans cannot use the Democrats' playbook to win us over. We cannot act like we're entitled to the youth vote. We have to earn it. Every single vote vote. That means listening to their concerns. That means if they're frustrated about Iran or housing prices or gas prices, we listen to them. Brian, you remember when Mayorkas got behind the White House podium and said, inflation, what is that? There's no such thing as inflation. We're not concerned about an invasion at our border. There's no such thing as an invasion. They dug their head in the sand and they ignored it under the Biden administration. We cannot ignore it. We have to address these concerns. We have to bring down prices. And then we win youth vote, but we earn it. We're not entitled to it.
All right, Brian Lydia, great conversation. Thanks so much. Next, only on One Nation, Jimmy Failla is here with the media moments that matter. And the answer to the question, what's replacing Colbert in late night? How about comedy? And please check out my YouTube channel, youtube.com, at the Brian Kilmeade Show. Jimmy, get over here. Bring the files.
I ain't having no bad days, 'cause we having them good days.
Media moments that matter.
All right, it's a big job, but someone's got to do it. This week I gave my TV guide, my subscription, my VCR, all my tapes and all my cords to the one and only Jimmy Failla, who stars in everything he's in.
Everything. He also gave me a time machine so I could go back and figure out how to use a VCR.
Like you
nice.
Pretend that you don't know.
Come on.
You gotta Jimmy, did you come up with anything?
I think I crushed it this week because all of these mattered to me.
Oh.
Let's see if we sync up, okay? Topic number one, Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yes.
Obviously, we made this incredible rescue of an F-15 fighter pilot 200 miles behind enemy lines. They're already casting the movie, but he got upset because Pete Hegseth said no man left behind.
What do you mean?
Can we please watch this? It's my favorite shot ever.
I'll wait here.
Brilliant rescue was described by the Secretary of Defense and by General Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as a longstanding American military rule of never leaving anyone behind.
We leave no man behind.
That is, of course, the old school version of the idea back when only men flew American military planes.
We leave no one behind.
The general knows, unlike Pete Hegseth, that that could have been a woman they were trying to rescue, and it might be a woman the next time.
He's outraged on that.
Everyone watching at home deserves an apology because we just cost them IQ points.
It's unbelievable.
People literally had points shaved off for watching that. If you're a female fighter pilot, okay, you're heaven forbid trapped 200 miles behind enemy lines and the chopper pulls up and goes, get in, no man left behind. You're not going to be like, hell no, I'm getting in. You fly off. I'll wait for someone who knows how to treat a woman like Iran. I'm not going to fly with you gender phobes. Are you kidding me?
All genders welcome, it should say on the chopper.
Yeah, see, now we've been saying for years in politics, the liberal media literally has to learn how to pick their battles.
Exactly.
This is a battle.
Now, the second topic is all you, late night television.
This is the one I really wanted to get to. Okay, they figured out what's going to replace Stephen Colbert.
Yes.
Obviously, they wanted something funnier, so they were going to air blimp accidents. they didn't. They're going with Comics Unleashed.
What do you mean?
Which is Byron Allen has been hosting the show in the middle of the night forever.
Right.
And he throws comics on, and they tell jokes and do their act. It's kind of a couchy, fun show. We have Asad. Do you want to see Asad?
Well, I know one thing that's interesting.
Okay.
Oprah talked to Stephen Colbert, kind of reverse course with him.
Yes, I love this so much. So she put him on the couch. Let's watch this.
I just want to say to you, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for holding the space for laughter. Has he not held the space for laughter for us in our lives and been there for us?
Oh, so kind of you. Thank you very much. And thank you for this. Thank you for this interview.
It's the longest goodbye ever.
That was a hell of a goodbye. And you know what? There's the difference in claps, okay?
Yeah.
There's the goodbye of reverence, like, thanks for the memories. That goodbye was like, finally.
Get him out. See, what they would say is, well, they didn't want comedy at night. It's too expensive. But how do you explain what's going to replace it?
Well, the nice thing about comedians, Brian, is we get paid weekly, very weekly.
Right.
So it's Byron Allen and a lot of comics on the way up. We have a shot of Byron Allen on stage. It's worth watching.
And you forget how much information you give them until you owe them money. I forgot I gave them my mama's number. They called my mama looking for me because that was my prior address and phone number. They called my mama talking about, your son owes us money. My mama was like, he owes me money, too.
So he is going to be replaced by comedians that actually try to make you laugh.
Yeah, after all of that, that's the point. When people tune in at 11 o'clock,
yes,
they just want to laugh, man.
I thought so.
They don't want a partisan lecture.
Right, that's what we like last night with Jimmy Fallon's late night show.
People watch Fox News Saturday night because it leaves them feeling like they, too, could get a national TV show.
That's one way to look at it.
It's funny and it's empowering, Kilmeade.
Right.
One more. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
My all-time fave. So Josh Shapiro, one of the 2028 hopefuls, slipped up and actually told people to stop hating on Trump.
In what way?
It's worth watching. Here we go.
We have an opportunity to have a real debate within our party about what we stand for, about what our affirmative vision is, which can't just be about banging Donald Trump every day. It has to be about what we are going to do to make people's lives better.
Did he just say banging Donald Trump? Is that what he meant to say?
But he did. I didn't realize they were married. Come on, Jimmy, I love you. We still got the spark.
Right, right.
But congratulations to him on never getting invited back to a liberal media event again.
But how could he make a mistake like that?
This is the thing. They have such an obsession with him because the Democrats relate to Trump like a guy who dumped them.
Right.
It's always like, hey, did you hear what Donald said?
Right.
Did you see what Donald tweeted? I know it's Easter, but Donald said something to Iran?
Right.
And they all sound like angry teenage girls.
I would never make a mistake like that.
No, I don't know. I'm going to throw the challenge flag, Kilmeade, if you don't mind. And I hate to do this because you gave me the VCR, but I might have used it against you. Can we take a look?
All right. Meanwhile,
check out the goodbye pie.
I love Friday.
While you guys are eating us out, let me just tell you what's coming up next. One of the my favorite guests of the week, General Jack Keane, is going to be out.
Okay.
Yeah, that didn't come out exactly right.
You know, sometimes you got to level with the viewer, because I know this about you, but the viewer didn't know you were moonlighting as a phone sex operator.
That is not
That's
true.
What it was.
They were eating, and I wanted to go to break.
Uh-huh.
That was my only thing.
Oh, they went to break all right.
So, Jimmy, thanks so much for your time.
It was
amazing. Love the wardrobe. Fantastic.
It's a look, right?
Promise to never dress up for us and keep this all confidential. But now it's time for me to tell you what's going to be coming up this week. This is the sneak peek of the week, and here we go. First, it's going to be hearing on fraud in all these federal programs. We're starting to unearth where all this waste is going, and it's led by the President of the United States. To see if states get involved, we'll find out about that. Also, a roundtable on AI influencing America prosperity. That's going to be big. I think we all should be paying attention to that. Divergence Lukas Zinger, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago, will be featured. Budget hearing in the Department of Homeland Security. Turns out they need money, even though Congress doesn't agree with that. Funding ICE, CBP, and citizenship services all there. That's going to be front and center. And finally, the NHL playoffs begin on Saturday. And with the NBA playoffs, we will start first. Go Knicks. Most of America like to see the Knicks win for the first time since the early 70s. Sad news. That is it for us tonight. I got a message for you. Tune into the radio show every single day from 9 to noon. You will love it. And catch me in just a few hours on Fox and Friends. I'll jump in the shower. I won't have time to rinse and repeat. Won't use conditioner. I'll be back there with a great host of guests. As always, I have two things to say. Keep it on Fox and stay within yourself. Yeah.